Joining me right now, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, Will Humble. Thanks for coming back on the show, Mr. Humble. I appreciate your time. Let's start off with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. They've applied for use now. What's the time frame for passage usually, and when could we expect to see that vaccine in Arizona?
Yeah, they applied for emergency use authorization yesterday from the FDA. FDA set up the meeting to review that application on the 26th. So that's 3 weeks. I wish it was a little earlier than that. We could use this vaccine now. But they've done some press releases. They haven't published the phase 3 clinical trial data yet, but I'm confident that we'll probably see emergency use authorization probably the 27th or 28th. And they've got vaccine ready to deliver now. So by the very end of February, probably March 1st, we'll see some Johnson & Johnson vaccine here in Arizona, I think.
So is this going to be a game changer, a single dose vaccine?
Well, two things that make it a game changer. It's a single dose vaccine, which is terrific because it really simplifies things in terms of follow-up. But also, the storage and handling for this vaccine is a snap. It's just, you just put it in the refrigerator. So what that means is that it's a great vaccine for pharmacies, drugstores, doctor's offices, because, you know, you don't have this, you know, cold chain requirement that you have with Pfizer and Moderna. So game changer in the U.S., but globally, this is a real godsend, this vaccine. I mean, developing nations in Africa and so forth are really betting on this Johnson & Johnson vaccine because of the easy storage and handling and the fact that it's a one and done.
And how many doses can be produced for, like, with a vaccine like this? How quickly can they produce this vaccine and get it out?
So the federal government has a contract with Johnson & Johnson to deliver 100 million doses in the U.S. By, I think it's June 1st. So they've apparently, that means they have the manufacturing capacity in the U.S. to deliver that many. So now that, for, you know, that's equivalent to, say, 200 million of a Pfizer shot, right? Because it's a one and done. So big advantages in terms of storage and handling. And the only thing I wish is that the FDA would review the data quicker. You know, they're taking 3 weeks. With Pfizer, they did it in 2 weeks.
When you look at this Johnson & Johnson vaccine having the, what's about 66, they're saying, percent. Well, Johnson & Johnson says it's a little bit higher, but it's not over 90% like the other two. Is this going to be more beneficial for younger people, older people? Or is it not going to matter?
Well, here's the thing. You're right. It's slightly less effective at preventing illness itself than the first two, the Moderna and the Pfizer. But when you look at, like, its effectiveness at preventing severe disease and death, it's just about as effective. So you could think of it like this. It's, you know, it's an insurance policy against dying and probably an insurance policy against going to the ICU, but you might get a slight illness when compared to the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccines. So, and to answer your question, people have asked me, what should I do? Should I hold out for the Pfizer because it's slightly more effective? If look, here's my attitude. If you have access to one of these vaccines, get it. And it doesn't matter which manufacturer you're talking about. I mean, time is more important than that small percentage difference, in my opinion.
We've seen Arizona with State Farm Stadium, now with Phoenix Municipal Stadium, seems to be getting a really good grip on the ability to administer the vaccines in mass. How quickly are we going to see a significant drop in hospitalizations and deaths, in your opinion, now that we've been able to vaccinate or are at vaccinating that over 65 age group?
Yeah. So first of all, you know, the county pods are doing a terrific job, too. I know State Farm gets all the attention, but you know, county, Maricopa County's got five pods that are putting out more than those state ones, but they just don't get the attention. But so bottom line is, I think we're going to see, and we are seeing, a reduction in ICU bed use and new hospitalizations now for COVID-19. I don't think we're going to see a drop in deaths for a while because, quite honestly, if not most of those people in ICU beds right now are not going to make it. Deaths will take a while to start dropping off, but we are already seeing a reduction in new cases and new hospitalizations, which is encouraging. Now, I have to say, I think probably the reduction in new cases has more to do with the number of people that were infected with this virus in December and January than it has to do with the number of people vaccinated. I mean, even as it is right now, with the vaccinations that happened in January, more people were infected in January and recovered than people that got vaccinations. So the way we get to herd immunity is going to be a combination of both people that have been infected and recovered and also vaccinations. So they work together to build the antibody titer amongst Arizonans that gets us to herd immunity eventually.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But with the over 65 crowd being vaccinated in this phase 1B now in very high numbers, and we also know that statistically it's over 65 that are the majority of the hospitalizations and deaths. I was wondering how quickly you think we can start seeing results of those vaccinations.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it will be the fact that we're focusing on 75 plus is going to have a big effect on hospitalizations. Here's what I would say about it, which is that we're going to see a bigger drop in new hospitalizations and eventually deaths than we will see a drop in cases.
Right.
Because the cases are dominated by people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, whereas the deaths are dominated or had been dominated and will still be dominated by people over 75. The more people we get vaccinated in that elderly age group, the faster we'll be able to drop the new hospitalizations, deaths, ICU bed use, et cetera.
We know that we Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve, bang, 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 three big super spreader events. Are you concerned the Super Bowl parties or Super Bowl gatherings are going to be of a super spreader event to that magnitude or not as much?
Well, certainly it has a potential. You know, I'd put it on par with probably a little bit less than Thanksgiving, maybe on par with maybe Christmas Eve or something like that. You know, there's going to be a lot of mixing. A lot of people are going to get together. Fortunately, we're in a little bit better space than we were in terms of community spread at Christmas. You know, when you compare right now to Christmas and New Year's, there's a little bit less community spread, which means that it's a little bit less likely that someone at your Super Bowl party is going to have active illness when compared to, you know, New Year's Eve or a Christmas party. So, but that's not a license to be, you know,
right,
cavalier about this. Do what you can to ventilate, make sure, you know, especially anybody like my parents, I'm bringing them over, but we've got hopefully it's going to be warm. We'll open the double doors and have them sit close to the back of the television. Cause I mean, this is an important event. We're social animals. We need this kind of interaction, and the key is to just do it safely and do what you can to mitigate.
Is it realistic? The CDC is saying that it's probably not a good idea to cheer, you know, the yelling and the screaming and the jumping around at the Super Bowl party. They're encouraging people to, like, bang pots and pans or sticks together or something. Come on, that doesn't even seem realistic.
I don't know. I'm not going to comment on that.
Well, see,
I mean,
that's
there are a lot of people in public health that are in ivory towers, and that sounds like an ivory tower kind of suggestion.
Okay, well, I'm glad you said that. I agree with you. I think that that's absolutely kind of an ivory tower suggestion. I appreciate the time today in this. Oh, one last question. You were critical or have been a bit critical of the way the state has handled some of the other things leading up to. But now that we're vaccinating, it seems as if they've turned things around with State Farm Stadium and getting vaccinations out there. Are you happy with the rate of vaccinations right now in Arizona overall?
I think overall in many counties it's doing well. Pima is a model. Pima is doing a terrific job. Maricopa, and I'll just reiterate again, these Maricopa County pods don't get the attention that they deserve because they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting here. But, I think there are some gaps in some of these rural counties like Apache County, La Paz County. The areas where we're having trouble are some of these rural counties. And I would like to see if the state's going to do any interventions moving forward, that they'll focus more on these rural parts of the state that are struggling.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Mr. Humble, always a pleasure to talk to you. And we look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Take care.